All right, guys, welcome to episode 25 of The Scoop. I'm Jamie Gray, joined by Kyle Gauss, Matt Vender, and John DiCarlo. I don't know if they're very happy to have me back, but it's good to be back.
You're not as enthusiastic as I was last week. I treated the responsibility of starting off the podcast like a responsibility, and you look like you're just going through the motions.
Welcome to episode 25, guys, of The Scoop. I'm Jamie Gray, joined by Kyle Gauss, Matt Vender, and John DiCarlo. How are you guys doing today?
Good.
Yeah, that was just forced.
Silver anniversary.
I'm a little bit offended. I thought that was pretty good. That's my best work.
Silver anniversary of the podcast.
It's very silver, actually. I'm wearing nothing silver to celebrate it.
I don't think I have.
Mine's white gold. My ring's white gold, so no.
We tried. So how are you guys doing today?
Good.
Doing well.
Yeah, good.
That's great. All right, guys.
Your spring breaks, college spring breaks. What'd you do?
I slept a lot. It was snowy last week, and now it's 80 degrees here in Philadelphia, so it's a lot nicer now being back at school than it was at home.
Matt?
Went north of the border to Montreal.
There you go.
Now I'm back.
Now he's on some Homeland Security list.
He's on a list somewhere. I heard he had some things to say.
Yeah, so. You see, you were interrogated for an hour?
Yeah, it was rough.
Wait, but the U.S. side or the Canadian side?
The U.S. side. Getting into Canada is easy. You just have to say,
hey, buddy.
Yeah.
What was the weirdest question you got upon your return?
They ask you a lot of personal questions that are just strange. Like, what do you do for work? Like, stuff that just has no relation to why you would be in Canada, basically. And it's they put you in a room and they ask you a ton of questions. It's scary.
So, light directly on you?
There's no light, but you're with like six border agency people, and they're asking you question after question, ask the same question over and over again.
What's going on with your car at this time?
They're searching it.
So, like, are you just, like, pulling up to the border and they're like, all right, get out? Or do you pull up and they're like, you know you're going to have to get out?
You pull up and then you have to meet with one border person. And then they basically determine if you should go for a secondary screening. And she's like, pulled aside. We need to do a secondary screening. And then after that, we got interrogated in some room. And it was rough.
Were they talking like the Canadians in South Park? Did they call you buddy a lot?
Well, these were people from the United States.
That's right. New York.
You made that point earlier. I completely missed it. I'm an idiot. I'll sit up the next couple minutes.
It's a good move.
Good. Solid.
I was just trying to force a South Park joke, and that's what happens.
But yeah, I'm back now, and everything's all right.
We're glad you're back, Matt. I'm very happy he's back.
I'm happy he's back, too.
All right, guys. Well, as Matt went north, Temple actually went down south. They're down there now.
That transition.
That's right good. There. That's a good one, I think.
Yeah, that was solid.
American Athletic Conference Tournament. Temple right now, we're in between on who they're going to be playing tomorrow. We're taping this on a Thursday.
Right now, USF is up 1 point with 10 minutes and 37 seconds.
47-46.
Excuse me, Johnny has more up-to-date information.
No, 47-43.
Either way, so the game is in progress right now, and Temple will be playing USF for ECU. They split the season with ECU and went 2-0 against USF this year. So why don't you guys give me a little preview of what we might see against, who the winner might be, of Temple might be facing tomorrow at noon.
Refer
the stat sheets, go ahead.
Well, yeah, I mean, either way, it's the winner of the 8-9 matchup, kind of a... Regardless of who they play, you assume Temple is the presumed favorite in that situation. The loss to East Carolina came at East Carolina right after a couple days after, you know, they beat number, what were they, 12 at the time?
12
SMU?
At the time, SMU.
Number 12 SMU.
No, they were eighth at the time.
Number 8, Jamie. Number 8 SMU, you go on the road, you lay an egg against a pretty bad East Carolina team. East Carolina is pretty much, they got even, like, one thing they have is a pretty balanced offensive attack. Four guys in double digits, led by B.J. Tyson. In conference, B.J. Tyson's averaging 14.2. Overall, he's averaging 14.5. So, Pirates really haven't done much this year. They're 12-9, 8-8 at home. They're only 4-11 away from Greensboro.
Something new every day.
And then, you know, the Bulls are kind of pretty much the Jabal McMurray show. A very, very talented freshman, 15.3 points a game. After that, it's... a lot of a big drop off to a 7-24 team. You know, Temple went 2-0 against them. Both times won relatively soundly. So I don't know who you really want, because on one end, you know, you beat USF both times, but on the other hand, they have the type of guard in McMurray that if he goes off, maybe he puts a little scare into him. Pirates, you split with them 1-1, but I think you probably match up a little better with them. So either way, it's a game that if Temple loses because of how bad the opponent's RPIs are, that might take him out of an at-large consideration. So it'll be interesting.
Now, as we're sitting here now, again, it's about about 5 o'clock on Thursday. So by the time you guys are listening to this, you know, on Friday, the opponent will be determined. Now, interestingly enough, McMurray at this juncture, as we're recording this, is shot 2 of 11, only has 5 points, and Angel Nunez has about eight points more than his average. I think he averages about 9 points a game. He's gone for 17 on 7 of 11 shooting. He's a bigger guy. He's around 6'8 or 6'9. So, I don't know. Kind of interesting. I mean, they've kind of struggled against any sort of size this year. No.
You're not even mentioning the fact that DeMarcus Cousins' brother is on that team. Jahlil Cousins, viewed by some, you know, second-round pick. So
maybe if you would give me the chance.
You made eye contact with me. That's the handoff. That's the signal.
You're not even mentioning
him. Talk about Jahlil Cousins.
So far, it looks like, I don't even know if he's played today. He's not listed. He's not listed on the stat sheet so far. So I don't know. Not real sure.
Good talk, Johnny.
I don't know. Well, anyway, again, this juncture right now, USF's up 51-43. But again, they're 7-24 overall coming into this game. USF is 12-19. Again, as Kyle said, I mean, that was one of those clunker losses earlier this year where Temple kind of gone up and down, up and down. You're coming off beating SMU and then go on the road a couple, 2 days later, 2 or 3 days later, and lose to them on the road. So, a game that they absolutely have to win.
He's making things up as you go. 5.7 boards, 2 blocks for Cousins so far.
Okay, maybe I'm just, I don't know.
He's flying by the seat of
his pants. Box score that I'm looking at on ESPN right now does not.
Did you expand it? Because it just shows the starters. Anyway, let's just keep going.
Anyway. So again, I think we can all agree that they have to win. You know, they have to win. You know, that opening round game. After that, they will play the winner of the 4-5 game between Cincy and UConn. Either losing to either one of those teams, not necessarily an RPI killer, but I guess what it depends upon. I don't know how many bid stealers there are around the rest of the country. Of course, the team itself is going to say, yeah, we want to win the whole thing. We're not leaving anything to chance.
One of the things important about that game is, regardless of who you play, regardless if it's Cincy or UConn, you're competing with that team for an at-large bid. So, mm-hmm. obviously, just to kind of help your own case, put yourself above the other two teams, pretty mm-hmm. important to win that game, too.
Yeah. Then you on the other side of the bracket, I mean, all things considered, I think things shape up pretty well for them. Memphis, Tulsa, Houston are on the other side of the bracket. I still think that Memphis is a team to watch. They have so much talent, but they're just so poorly. I just feel like they should be a lot better than they are. Tulsa has obviously given them problems. They split with Houston and didn't exactly look, I don't know, I didn't think they looked great at all against Tulane in the season finale. No. Again, we've been talking about this all year. They've been up, down, up, and down. They have a lot of flaws, and yet here they are. They get the top seed in the conference tournament and win the regular season championship outright. But weren't really pleased with how they played against Tulane. Fran Dunphy talked about that a little bit earlier this week. Here's what he had to say about their performance against Tulane and how they're not really resting on their laurels, so to speak.
I'm happy of what we have accomplished. I can't say I was thrilled after the Tulane game of how we played. We watched film of it today. We all had our mistakes made, and we have to cut down that. That's not going to get it. So we had enough of a cushion. We played very well early and not so well later on in the game, but it gave us enough of a cushion that we could hang on and win the game.
So, yeah, and in that game, Quentin DeCozy gets off to a really good start and then ends up turning the ball over 6 times against the worst team in the league. He had a bad turnover right at the end of the first half, kind of one of those lazy passes that he's kind of prone to throwing every once in a while. Really the whole team could have been better. But, again, we saw some of those stretches where they would just kind of look out, not really, really struggle to run offense and, again, got by, won the game, but that's a team you should, really be beating by double digits. So, I don't know. Sounds like the easy question to ask, but what do they have to do down there to win this thing?
I think it kind of falls back to what it's going to fall down to most of next year. I think Obi is the X factor. Mm-hmm. I think if he keeps playing like he did for the second half of the game, where he's giving you, or second half of the season, where he's giving you 15, 16, 17 points a game, you can kind of afford for DeCozy to not play his best. I mean, DeCozy hasn't shot better than 40% in almost a month. The last time he shot better than 40% was against South Florida on February 14th. So since then, it's been a lot of 2 for 12s, 3 for 12s, 4 of 11 games. So not the way you want to kind of finish out your career if you're Quentin DeCosey, but I think you got to kind of rely heavily on Obi to kind of stretch the floor a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And you also probably need Jalen Bond to just keep up what he's been doing. I mean, yep. He put up 10 and 16 boards against Tulane, and he's just been on a tear recently.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, if you can get Bond to keep up the way he's been playing, and Obi really turned, I guess he turned a corner actually in that game at East Carolina, the mm-hmm. game that they lost. But if you can keep Obi going and keep the way Bond's been playing over these last 5-6 games or so, I think those two things would be what would propel them to 2-3 wins this weekend.
Now the big question is, how many wins do you think they need down there to lock it up? They'd obviously prefer to win. And you mentioned before UConn and Cincinnati would be the teams they need to be ahead of for an at-large bid. Do you think it's going to come down to Saturday and winning that game before the championship, or do you need to win it all?
If you're thinking at large, I mean, if I'm them, I'd feel a heck of a lot better. I think they need to win too. I think if they win, you know, if they win the quarterfinal round, obviously if they lose that game, I think they're in trouble. If they win the quarters, lose in the semis to either UConn or Cincy, I think Sunday gets really, really interesting again. But again, who knows?
I really think they just need to win one, to be honest. I think you need to avoid the let up at noon tomorrow. I think there's just so few teams that are really on the bubble.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're probably competing with Syracuse lost to Pitt. That right. probably eliminates them, maybe. You're competing with Tulsa. You're competing with Monmouth, maybe. Like, I honestly think if you avoid the let up, your RPI probably maintains the same mm-hmm. or it gets better by if you lose to Cincinnati mm-hmm. or lose to UConn. So.
What do you think, Matt?
I mean, let's say you beat ECU or USF and then you lose to Cincy or UConn, I guess you're feeling you're going to be nervous heading into Sunday. There's going to be a scare.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess I agree with Kyle that they probably in all likelihood they get in. But I also feel like though every year we hear it's a weak bubble almost. It sounds like people say that every year. And I guess it helps with this year SMU and Louisville aren't going to get bids, two teams that would probably be single-digit seeds if they didn't have the postseason bans. So that helps, but I think they really need to win two, and then you feel really good about
heading into Sunday. You feel great if you win two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think if you lose against UConn or Cincy, you want the team you lost to win the conference. Because like I said before, if they win and then they lose to Tulsa or they lose to Houston, well, then okay. Then Tulsa gets the automatic bid, and then when it comes down to at-large bid, who are we going to take? Temple or Cincy, the team that just beat Temple 2 days ago? Like, I feel like that definitely plays into it, even though Temple swept them during the regular season, the fresh in your mind loss probably doesn't help them.
The only thing, and again, the only thing that I think of is that every year, you know, I feel like the selection committee likes to say, like, oh, we abide by these principles, we abide by this. But every year I think that, you know, obviously there are different people on it, has a different personality. The only reason I would feel much better from them is if you at least, you know, win through Saturday and get to the championship game is – you just have a weird resume. You know, they've performed well against the top half of the league. It's just hard to figure what the committee is going to put more emphasis on. You know, when you're looking at the resume and saying they don't have even a good or a decent non-conference win. You know, their best non-conference win is what, Minnesota?
Their best non-conference win is a close loss to St. Joe's.
Close loss to St. Joe's. At least Fairleigh Dickinson got in.
Yeah.
But you know, they have the very weak non-conference resume, but as we've talked about this year, unlike last year, they performed very, very well against the top half of the league. You know, you beat SMU, swept UConn, swept Cincy, split with Tulsa, split with Houston. So they've got that going for them. But again, it's hard to figure like what they're going to put more emphasis on. Matt makes a good point too. Every year you hear, well, it's kind of a weak bubble, and then when the picks are announced, they talk about, oh, this was a tough decision. And then once these guys did this, we moved this. You know, this team got knocked out. Right.
Do you remember like Khalif's senior year? People were saying, all right, they're still like they're barely in there. And then it came up and they were an 8 seed or 9 seed.
Yeah.
So they were like mm-hmm. pretty firmly in. So I'm not going to be one of the people that tries to claim that they're, you know, bracketologists. My gut just tells me that they're not in that bad of shape.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But my gut also told me the same thing last year. Until we physically got into Pearson McGonigal, and I was convinced they weren't.
Yeah, and they start announcing like those 10 seeds, yeah. And you know, you know, you see UCLA get in, see what Indiana was getting in.
Was it Texas, I think?
And Kyle looks at me and says, they're not getting into, this tournament. And I mean, that was really the first time in recent memory, really in like the modern era of, I don't know, bracket projections and stuff like that, where Temple was on the bubble and didn't get in. Every year that they were, you know, an at-large team under John Chaney, they would get in because their strength of schedule was great. They'd always have a couple of big non-conference wins, and sometimes they would get in as a 17, 18-win team. Last year. That was the first time where it was like, oh, wow. You know, they really didn't get in. So, I don't know. Next couple of days would be interesting. I think they need to win two to get in, but I don't know. Well, Kyle likes to say I'm not a doctor.
I am, though.
In the past, when you look back at the past, I mean, even last year you typically had a signature non-conference win. Last year it was Kansas, and this year they don't have it. I mean, they went 6-6 in the non-conference slate. They had opportunities. They played a tough non-conference schedule, but they lost to North Carolina, lost to Butler, lost to Utah,
lost to Nova,
lost to Nova, lost to St. Joe's. So those are what, six tournament teams that they lost to.
Well, St. Joe's apparently getting pretty close to the bubble.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, Duquesne lost, certainly. You know, a couple weeks ago lost at Davidson, and then the Duquesne loss is a bad loss.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It'll be interesting. Who else other than Obi? Give me some sort of X factor. Somebody else who's got to play well that you need a little juice from.
Devin Coleman. I feel like Devin Coleman is just filled that Jesse Morgan race, but he's better than Jesse Morgan. He's a better player than Jesse Morgan, I think.
You think so?
I think so. I think Jesse Morgan was pretty one-dimensional. Devin can defend a little bit. He has the ability to
I don't think he's a better defender than Jesse. Jesse was a better, like a more rangy
Jesse's
defender.
Jesse's offense was entirely corner threes. He couldn't get to the hoop. I don't know. I think Devin's filled that role, at least accurately. And then you see the games with SMU where if he can, he hits 4 or 5, 5 or 6, something like that, and all of a sudden their offense actually looks pretty good.
And that's obviously what March is predicated on, is someone gets hot at the time for shooting. It's almost like running a hot goalie in hockey, so I would almost agree with that statement.
Yeah. Matt, what do you think?
I mean, yeah, Kyle kind of stole mine. I don't know.
He stole your thunder.
Yeah. Six-man rotation.
Stole your thunder, as they say in the sports talk video. Last caller stole my thunder.
However, if I had to go with somebody besides Coleman, I mean, with the short bench that they're running, there's not that many choices to pick from. Like I mentioned before, Bond is one that you'd hope can continue the success that he's had recently. And then you also look at Dan Dingell. I mean, if he can just give you a little bit more offensive production, I mean, he's...
Dingell needs to actually... You still see a little bit of hesitancy when he's, like, open for a three-pointer. Actually shoot this? Like,
I mean, he's played, four really good games this year, and then the rest have just been
What I'd like to see him do a little bit more of, quite honestly, and I'm not saying he's terrific at it, but at least there have been times where he'll kind of put his head down and say, I'm going to drive to the rim, and he's always been a good passer. I'd like to see him do a little bit more of that, because, again, there are way too many times against, not so great teams either, where they'll kind of stand around and look like they're looking at like a Syracuse, 3-2 zone in its heyday, and instead they're looking at a 10-win Tulane team, and I'm thinking, wow, they should be much better at this juncture of the season. And again, I Josh Brown is not always going to consistently be a beat you off the dribble type of guy, but he's taking care of the ball. I do think he's gotten better. I think Dingle's another guy that can drive to the rim a little bit. And even though his shooting's been inconsistent, I mean, I don't think he was ever going to be recruited to be a program-changing player, but I do think that he's a guy that's going to have to drive to the rim for you. I think Obi's going to have to do it, too. There are times when Obi, I guess it was, against Memphis? Memphis had cut it down to, three?
Three.
I think it went three. Yeah. And Obi had that drive where he was kind of along the right wing and drives in for that dunk. Those guys are going to have to do stuff like that. I don't think Devin Coleman tries to take people off the dribble. Just doesn't work. He'll get pushed. He'll get kind of shut off to the side, and he'll try to put a shot off the glass. Like, he's almost like 10 feet off to the left side of the hoop or the right side of the hoop, and it's not going to work. So, and I don't know, again, if you're facing any sort of bigger lineup, I'm sure Dunphy will probably shorten his bench. It'll be interesting to see if Ernest gets a few minutes here and there, if they have to go big, although I doubt it. It just seems like he's been so cautious.
At this point in the season, if they need to go big or falling into foul trouble, as much as fans are going to hate to hear it, he's going to go to Mark Williams.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Mark Williams is the backup big at this point.
And if you're Mark Williams, you basically just need to focus on shooting the ball and not trying any sort of dribble drive. It just seems like any time he comes in, floor balance goes out the window, something happens. But then there have been other times this year where he's, saved them a little bit.
Yeah,
look at that game at UCF. Mm-hmm. Without him, they would have lost that one. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of off topic a little bit, Philadelphia native Fran McCaffrey, his Iowa team just lost, like, last second to Illinois. The quote he had when a reporter asked him what was the play call with 4 seconds left, it's none of your business what the play call was.
Wow.
Refusing to tell reporter what they wanted to do.
Now, again, just as before we head to this next segment, USF is up 60-56 on East Carolina with 3:08 left to play. So
they're not making it easy for us to tell.
No, they're not.
I was hoping they would just have somebody would have taken care of by halftime.
Orlando Antigua at his finest, making things difficult for us. So, again, I think it's pretty safe to assume the Temple at least needs to get to that. You know, obviously can't afford a loss in the quarterfinals. We feel much better about itself in the if it beats Cincy or UConn in the semis and then gets to that championship game. Where do you think that, let's say they win the tournament outright.
Sure.
Where they get seeded?
I think their ceiling's like an 8-9. Like, if mm-hmm. if you won the tournament and you beat UConn or Cincy and then you beat like a Tulsa, it's like another big RPI team, I think you're like an 8-9.
I was going to say 7 at the peak.
I think that might be a little high. Yeah, 8-9. That general range. They wouldn't, if they win the tournament, they're not going to be like a 12. They'll get on.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Great. And again, the other interesting thing, too, if they get to the championship game, the American plays its championship game. And a lot of different writers I've talked to have kind of weighed in on this. You're playing your league championship game on a Sunday when a lot of the other, I think the committee has made the majority of its decisions at that point. And
the A-10 did that, too, right?
Yeah, the A-10 did that. I don't know. I don't profess to obviously sit in Mike Resco's shoes.
You're disinfecting seating.
Yeah, if I'm the American, I look to get this thing done a day earlier and finish up on Saturday instead of Sunday. I don't know.
So because they pretty much let everybody in now. They let like 10 teams into the tournament, the conference tournament.
Mm-hmm.
So do you cut that down to an 8? Do you have to just do everything up a day? I mean,
and why are they tipping at 3:15? That's
another good
Sunday.
Question. Well, that's by TV. But
I guess it's TV.
Yeah, sure.
But a noon tip would make a little bit more sense.
Right? And Erasco's especially more sensitive to TV because that's where he came from. But I don't know. Gets an out 62-58 USF, 1:38 to go. So
probably USF.
Well, should we just be suspenseful here and just sign off on this segment here?
Let's review it later.
A big reveal.
That's fun, man.
Via the internet. We are not down in Orlando right now.
Swish.
All right, man. I know you had a story you were about to post this week, and you had a few that were already up there. Go ahead and tell me about some of the updates you got for recruiting-wise.
So first off, and it'll probably be up on the site tomorrow, Zakaria Bruton, he's a 2017 defensive back and receiver from William Penn High School in Delaware. He was offered by Temple yesterday. I had a chance to speak with him earlier this afternoon. He also has offers from Delaware and Delaware State, so it's his first FBS offer. Bruton picked up an offer on Wednesday from the receivers coach, Frisman Jackson, and also talked to Matt Rule on Tuesday. He was on campus on February 17th for Temple's Junior Day, which was also the same day as the Villanova basketball game. Seems like Temple is in good shape for him right now. It's early, of course, but as it stands now, Temple seems to be in a good position for him.
One of those guys they get in on early. He kind of has some FCS offers, and then as his recruitment goes on, he starts picking up more along the way. One of those guys, you think?
Yeah, and he seems like a kid. I mean, you look at his stats, I find it interesting. Temple right now is recruiting him as a receiver. Jackson, of course, is the lead recruiter on him, but he only had 188 receiving yards last year and 2 touchdowns. So had played mainly cornerback. I don't know. I guess Temple maybe got a look at him as a freshman or sophomore and saw some film at him as a receiver. He's 6'2", 185. So I find it a little bit interesting that Temple likes him at receiver. If you look at his defensive stats, he has 36 total tackles, 28 pass deflections, 4 interceptions. So he put up some big numbers as a defensive back, but right now Temple's recruiting him as a receiver. And just one last thing on him, or two last things I want to put in there. He's a three-sport athlete, actually runs track and plays varsity baseball. And at the moment, he's visited Rutgers, Ball State, has some interest from Syracuse.
What was he visiting? Never mind. What's he visiting Muncie, Indiana for?
Just because you lived in Indiana.
That's what I'm saying. Geographically, it doesn't make sense. Like, oh, where am I going to take my unofficial visit? Muncie, Indiana.
I think I could be.
Maybe he went to a camp or something.
I could be really wrong on this, so don't quote me on it necessarily, but I think I saw that his brother
plays for
Ball State. Mm-hmm. So I think he has some sort of connection to Ball State. Ball State hasn't offered yet. And Syracuse and Fordham have been showing some interest too. So again, Temple got in early. I'd assume he'll pick up some more FBS offers. Mm-hmm. But he's certainly a kid to watch right now.
You know what the highlight of Muncie, Indiana is? The Garfield Museum is in Muncie, Indiana.
There's a Garfield Museum?
Because the guy that created Garfield,
Jim Davis
is from Muncie, Indiana.
I did my
community service in like sophomore year of high school at, not like court mandate, like a,
oh,
like
this a, what
community,
I was ask
like
you,
a community service day at the Garfield Museum, thinking it'd be cool, and they would just shove us in like the basement, be like, I'll go clean out like the Halloween decorations. There's spiders and sharp things everywhere.
Lasagna down there?
A lot of lasagna.
Jamie knows his Garfield. Hates Mondays, loves lasagna. I loved Garfield growing up. I wrote
the little books. Yeah.
I wrote to the little rectangular ones. Yeah. I wrote to Jim Davis, got like some automated autograph bag.
Probably came from Muncie, Indiana.
Yeah. Loved it. All right.
It's him and David Letterman.
Some quality Garfield knowledge there. And Boswells. And then and a story that's already up on the site right now on Ricky John's class of 2017 wide receiver from North Penn High School in Lansdale. Matt talked to him as well. What can you tell us about that interview and that conversation?
So he's a 6'3", 180-pounder, also a receiver, defensive back combo. But at the moment, Temple is recruiting him as a receiver, I believe. He also has an early offer from West Virginia, so Temple wasn't the first to get in there, but Temple was the second, obviously. One stat that I want to include in here is which one of you, Kyle and John, went to Downingtown East?
Neither.
Well, so when I was, because I'm older, at the time Downingtown was just one high school. It was just before it was split. When I went there, it was in the building that is now Downingtown West. Kyle went to West. If I were to go there right now, based off of where my parents live, I would have gone to East. So
okay.
Downingtown.
I went to East Middle School and then West High School.
Yeah.
Well, my Downingtown East-West knowledge is lacking, I guess.
No. It's good. Right on the right track.
However, John's put up over 170 yards and 2 touchdowns against Downingtown East, which you guys would appreciate.
East has some players. Kerry Angeline, like, mm-hmm. probably played a little defensive end for them. They put another lineman in Maryland. Yeah, they're good.
Kerry Angeline's going to be a tight end.
He's going to USC,
tight end.
Mm-hmm.
So John's being recruited by mainly Evan Cooper, the director of player personnel, and he's also talked to Adam DeMichael on a few occasions. And it seems like Temple is in okay shape for him. I don't know. It sounds like he might be one of those kids that probably wants to leave the area, go to a Big 12 SEC type of school. Mm-hmm. But certainly another kid to watch, and he wants to come back for a spring practice. He was also at that junior day on February 17th. So, you know, I think Temple will kind of stay involved there, and he'll be another kid that's going to add some more FBS offers, and you'll just have to see how that kind of plays out.
Mm-hmm. And again, just to include, you know, a little kind of touching on some stuff we talked about last week, spring practice picks up next week or starts next week, so we'll have some more coverage on that. Pro Day is next Wednesday, so obviously I'd say a pretty big day for you know, people like Kyle Friend, Robbie Anderson, guys that didn't get invited to the combine. So we'll be talking next Thursday, a little Pro Day, impressions from Pro Day, who was there, any interviews we get from there, you know, plenty of spring practice coverage and some of the position battles that shape up there, and of course more recruiting news from Matt and some of the people he's talked to. So we'll have more football stuff for you next week as well.
Mail time.
Mail time.
Mail time.
Mail time. The mail's here.
Time.
And it's time for the mailbag, guys, where I guess I should introduce it. We're not kidding. But I'm back, so I feel good that I can introduce the mailbag one more time. Quick, unless, look, do you want to do
Rod
it?
Rod Streeter getting interest on the Eagles, according to Tim McManus.
Really?
Ooh.
By visiting the Patriots.
You're breaking some news, Kyle.
Not really. Apparently this came out like 5 hours ago. I'm just not seeing it.
Well, I rescind my compliment towards you. So I'll take our first mention here in the mailbag. It comes from Joe Becca. My parents thought it's from the message boards.
Yeah.
All right. Very excited for my 1,000th post. I guess it's where I hit the message board. Nice.
Congratulations.
How many posts am I in?
And he kind of wants, he's asking if you guys send him a commemorative plaque, so.
We send down umbrellas. Like, tell me when you go to 5 years.
Nice.
A clock of some sort. Clock?
I get an umbrella.
I got something around here. Some sort of globish paperweight type of thing.
Nice.
That's a little strange looking, actually. I am at 704 messages, so I'm not at
You're not even close.
I am close.
All right, so his first question, what does Temple have to do to punch their ticket to the dance in each of our opinions? I think we kind of discussed that earlier where Kyle said a win will get you, express our confidence.
I'm an optimist.
I'm saying 2 wins.
I'm going with 2. Matt?
I'm going to go with 2.
Okay, so.
Just you guys wait.
I'm a little Kyle. And it's a two-parter, so. What can you share, if anything, about how Trey is doing? Did he have to drop his classes to recover? And assuming full recovery, will anything about timing and academic requirements present a challenge for his eligibility next season?
Not much new on Trey, other than the fact that I, not to make him sound like he's on a hockey report, but I mean upper body injuries, longer recovery, but you know doing well. You know, again, sounds like a cliche, but you know taking his recovery a day at a time, out for the rest of the season. Fortunate to be alive. Did he have to drop his classes to recover? Even if I knew that, I would not be at liberty to reveal someone's transcript or something like that. I've always been told he's a good student. I don't expect that this would impact him academically to the point where he would be ineligible. You know, I think he's got, you know, when stuff like this happens, you have to remember that these athletes have academic advisors, they have administrators wherever they are that help out with situations like this, help out the student, help out the family. So, I mean, I think as long as he, as long as he recovers, goes through any, you know, physical therapy or anything that he's, any treatment, I keep being told that, you know, he should be recovered in time for next season. But, you know, got banged up pretty badly. Again, it's fortunate to be alive. But, yeah, I'm not expecting any academic issues. I'm sure he's, might have to take some time off from school, but I don't think it's going to be anything that impacts him. He's always been a good student, and again, these guys have resources available to them when something like this, something unfortunate like this happens.
All right, and the next one comes from Freemzy, directed John. Maybe I'm repeating a question already asked, but since we have one hoop scholarship left for next year, will we be offering anyone maybe a grad transfer, another high school kid, or will we save it?
I think we did talk about this a little bit last week. I've heard that they're kind of dipping their toe into the JUCO pool and looking for somebody who can make.
It's like a slightly smaller pool. It's like 4.5 feet.
You only get a membership there for 2 years. My jokes have just stunk today. Okay. I don't know. What do you want? It's a weird reference. Anyway, I think they are looking for some sort of immediate impact help, whether it's whether it's a wing forward who can score or whether it's a big. They always seem to just kind of run into this at the past couple of years they've recruited fairly well in the fall, and in the spring they kind of run out of gas. So I don't know if they're just going to look for like a best player available type, but again, I continue to be told that they are looking at some junior college players, and I would guess that they're probably going to hang on to that scholarship as they usually do for a transfer if anything shakes loose as of late. But not much new on that front. Haven't heard anything really significant on them kicking the tires on any foreign players. But again, the Ion Carvalho thing kind of came around late last year. So I don't know, maybe that could pick up at some point. And then Key, of course, redshirted this year. So, but not much new on that front. I'm assuming that, we could hear of some things picking up in April, but again, by that point, you've already moved on to 2017-2018 kids. But I'll be interested to see if they actually do really target and obtain a guy from the JUCO ranks, because that's never really been Fran Dunphy's style. It's not really the style of too many basketball coaches. It's more of a football thing, but we'll see. And now we've gotten a couple of late questions / remarks here from the mailbag. Second question in a second week in a row, we hear from a guy named Jack McNeil. Favorite side order from your local pizza place?
I guess he means, like, if you're ordering a pizza, what are you also getting on the side?
Yeah.
What else could he mean?
Depends. So here's here's my conundrum of this. Are wings considered a side order, or are they their own thing?
With pizza, they're a side.
I don't know. I would tend to agree, but are they their own thing? They could be. I think they're close.
If you order them like they are, yeah, but if you're getting pizza, it's
a side. So say I order a large, you know, pepperoni pizza, and I also get like 18 wings for like the people I'm with. Do wings become the primary thing at that point?
Absolutely not. No, pizza always takes over.
Okay, then I'll say wings.
Depends where you get the wings from.
Right, where are you getting your wings from?
I'm big on Larry's. They have one on Girard here. They have great barbecue wings. They're great.
Mm-hmm. You're a barbecue wing guy?
No, I'm a buffalo wing guy.
Not big on buffalo. I agree with Kyle.
Yeah,
not
a big barbecue.
That's disgusting wings, though. So I like what are your options as a side?
Fries.
No, you don't get fries.
Mozzarella sticks.
No, it's too greasy. I probably have to go with the wings. I don't like a side with my pizza that much, though. Not a huge fan of it.
Yeah.
I would take cheese fries.
Cheese fries is a good one.
I already have cheese on the pizza.
I don't go further than cheese fries.
You can never have enough cheese.
Like, they have like loaded fries where it's like a bacon and all that. I don't do that. I go cheese as far as I'll go. I'll do like regular fries, cheese fries. No, when it gets loaded, I'm done.
I don't even really pizza that much, so.
Because you have like 2% body fat.
Yeah, I guess so.
You're coming with two bottles of water, very hydrated.
Go ahead, make fun of me. John, we didn't get your answer.
I haven't had mozzarella sticks in a while. I would either go with wings or cheese fries. I don't know. Some of the places.
Midwest cheese curds are fantastic.
I've never had cheese curds.
Cheese curds. You got to make sure they're not like mozzarella sticks. Because some people make them as like tiny little mozzarella sticks. They're their own thing. They're worth seeing. They're basically deep fried cheese.
That's like a Wisconsin State Fair type of thing.
Oh,
right?
I've been in Madison a couple times lately, and they cheese curds there. It's delightful.
And then we finally hear from Pat Egan. I'm just going to read this out loud. It's not a question, more like a remark. So again, Pat works at 97.5, has his own podcast, which is very good. So he says to us, a flat tire and work at 5 have left me unable to compete today. You could call me the Anthony Lee of the Scoop. Little shot at former Temple.
Where's he at?
Temple forward.
It wasn't even faked anymore. We all literally went, ooh, at the same time. Yeah.
Former Temple basketball player from a couple years ago, pursued that graduate transfer year at Ohio State where things didn't really work out for him.
Good.
So well. Easy.
He was a very one-dimensional player at Temple, but...
Where is he now? He's got
to
be overseas.
BSC or office. He is in Austria.
Beautiful country, from what I hear.
Could we say he's the DeMarco Murray of Temple basketball?
Ooh.
There you go.
Scorned. And leaves for Austria.
He took a year off, though.
That's essentially what Tennessee is. It's Austria. It's Austria of the NFL.
All right, so that'll do it for today. Thanks for listening. Appreciate it very much. So next week we will have, a pretty full slate for you, pro day stuff, probably some more football recruiting stuff. Of course, we'll know at that point where Temple is playing, whether it's in the NCAA tournament or the NIT. We'll have plenty to talk about. Earlier in the podcast we said, that USF – East Carolina game was coming down to the wire. USF did, in fact, win that game 71-66. So Temple will be playing the South Florida Bulls in the quarterfinal round of the American Athletic Conference Tournament. That's a USF team that is 8-24 this year and 4-14 in league play. So neither of these teams were great in the American this year. They're both 4-14 in the league. So
McMurray just 9 points. So
yeah,
former Temple target Chris Perry 18 off the bench.
Mm-hmm. So, again, a lot to talk about next week. Pro day stuff. If you're a hopeful Temple fan, maybe some NCAA tournament stuff. And a lot of spring football stuff as that kicks off. So we'll have plenty for next week. Thanks again for tuning in, and we will talk to you next week.